from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
94 WIP, Mike Sielski and Glenn Mack now. And now we are thrilled to be joined by two of the power players in Philadelphia sports. We have with us John Middleton, the principal owner of the Phillies, and Dan Hilferty, the governor of the Flyers and the chairman of Comcast Spectacor. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Mike, Glenn, it's great to be here.
Wonderful to be here.
So, John, I want to begin with you. Let's get the obvious question out of the way right off the bat. Are you guys bringing the bleeping trophy back or what?
If I have anything to do about it, and Dave Dombrowski has anything to do about it, we will. Unfortunately, we've got a lot of games to play, so we'll find out how it all turns out.
John, let me follow up on that. Your team is built to win now, and we anticipate that Dave Dombrowski is going to make a trade or two. So, two-part question. You avoided going over the luxury tax threshold before the season. I think you're about $9 million under. I'm not positive to that. But given the current pathway to a title, are you prepared to spend above that? And I guess part B is you've got a very nicely stocked farm system now. Would prospects like Aiden Miller, Painter Abel, Johan Rojas, would they be movable for something to help you now?
So I just want to clarify something. I thought I heard you say that we didn't go over the luxury tax.
Well, the second threshold.
No, even higher. So the next threshold, Glenn, causes us to lose draft position and international signing dollars. So going over that, I don't have any problem spending money and paying the tax on it. When you start getting into its negative impact on draft picks and the number of foreign, international players you can sign, that's a whole different consideration. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about negatively impacting the long-term quality of the product. And I'm not saying we won't do that, but that's a whole different test of what you're getting back, what you're giving up and what you're getting back. And that's going to have to be Dave's decision ultimately to do that. So I'm not going to tell you no, but it really depends. You're going to have to get something back that's really special. I mean, candidly, like when we traded for Cliff Lee in the middle of the 09 season, you need to get an impact player like that, and preferably an impact player like Cliff that you could hopefully stick around. And well, he was at the end of his contract, but you'd want to get somebody who's more than a 3-month rental.
Go ahead, Glenn. Did you have something?
Well, just in terms of moving, you've got some really nice prospects down there. How reluctant, willing are you to trade them to win now? Again, your team's every opportunity to win right now.
So a couple things, Glenn. One, I know we're built to win now, as you say, but we're also built to win 3 years from now and 5 years from now. With players like Crawford and Miller, coming up, Painter coming back. I mean, these are guys who are going to be 22, 23 years old, in a couple of years, and they should be playing at a very high level. And that extends the window substantially. It's very different from, say, I think both the 93 team and the 83 team that had older players who were, frankly, at the end of their careers, and we didn't really have the farm system in either case to prolong the run. So I would Dave trade one of those players? I think it depends upon what he would get back. It's just these are the players you cited are really, really good players. And you'd have to get somebody really, really good and for a while. I mean, look, we traded Logan to the Angels, back in 22 because we thought we were getting back something special. We traded Brown to the Cubs because we thought in Robertson we were getting back somebody special who could help us win and make the difference. So we're willing to do that. It's just going to be a question of what the value is.
So one of the things that the team's success this season has manifested is a reminder of how vibrant the Philadelphia sports complex is when the Phillies or the Flyers or the Sixers or the Eagles is playing well and is at the top of its game. And that's the reason we wanted to get you two guys together, is that the Phillies and Comcast Spectacor have made public that they're partnering on a project to revitalize that area of the city. Dan, to you, how did this come to be?
Well, Mike, first of all, thanks again for having us here today. I just listening to John talk about the baseball cap system, hockey is so much different. I mean, it's a hard cap. And so the conversations we're having and the leadership of Keith Jones and Danny Briere around, as we say, doing this the right way, focusing on draft picks. Thankfully, next year, cap space will begin to free up. So that's not the answer to your question, the difference between our systems. So from our perspective, I was brought in 16 months ago and as chairman of Comcast Spectacor, and we had a focus on several things. But first and foremost was returning Comcast Spectacor to a level of a true sports empire, sports enterprise, where we look at investing or buying new franchises in different sports, particularly women's sports. We were looking at a rebuild of the Flyers, so to speak, and we finally said it's a rebuild, although we're going to try to win every game every year. The third thing was to address or to try in however we can to make sure that the 76ers stay at the sports district with us at Wells Fargo Center. And the final was, there's been a long-standing dream started by Ed Snyder, and then when he combined with Comcast, with Brian Roberts and Comcast, to eventually develop the sports district. So as John has traveled around with going to various stadiums, and we've traveled around looking at various cities and the way we do it, the new way to look at stadium districts is multi-use, exciting places where people can come, enjoy sports, and even live there and enjoy other restaurants and other amenities. You look at the Battery in Atlanta. You look at where the Lakers and the Kings play in downtown Los Angeles. These developments that emerged around them. So as we began to think about it, reached out to John. We had several meetings, and we have a shared vision for the sports district. And so that's how it emerged.
John, is that a fair way to characterize it?
Well, I would add a little bit of background to our position. You know, there are developments around a number of baseball stadiums. The Cardinals have something they call Ballpark Village. Down in the Rangers, they've got a big development. The Cubs have Wrigleyville. And of course, down in Atlanta is really the best example of that kind of adjacent development. So the Phillies, I've been personally looking at this issue for years, trying to figure out, but we're highly limited, not even highly. We are completely limited here because there is no parking lot that the Phillies control where we have development rights. So, and that's typical for most of the parking lots there. So anything that's going to be done on one of those parking lots has to get the approval of the other three teams, which is very, very difficult. We've also, in the interim, about 2 years ago, we bought the adjacent shopping center down in Clearwater to our spring training facility. And we're going to redevelop that on a much smaller scale. It's only about 13, 14 acres. So we've been thinking about this whole process for a long time. And so when Dan approached me, I mean, it was like, okay, you actually have parcels of land here, parking lots, that you have control over and development rights over. It was like, of course, we're going to join you. Because this is the key that we've been looking for to unlock the door the whole time. So I was absolutely thrilled when Dan approached us and said, we'd like to partner with you. So it was easy.
And it's been a fun discussion. I mean, when you think of all told, there's 227 acres throughout the sports district. The area that working with PIDC and the Stadium Special Services District, the area that we can develop the first part of this decade-long program is the area from Patterson Avenue to 95, 11th Street back to the Broad Street.
Dan, you you made reference to Ed Snyder, who did try to build up the South Philly complex from the very moment that he envisioned it, and he didn't get anywhere with it. Why will this be different?
You know, Glenn, it's a really, really good question. I think when you look at that time frame, both the Spectrum and the Wells Fargo stood together on that site. And so the first part of it was a determination of whether they should keep the Spectrum. Ed decided it was time to take the Spectrum down, put all the chips in the Wells Fargo Center. So that was first. And then I think other economic priorities, focusing on both the at the time, the Sixers and the Flyers, that it really never got traction. As Brian and I talked about me taking this role, we felt this was a great opportunity. When you think about the acreage that I just mentioned, when you think about the location, the Navy Yard right there, and FDR Park across Broad Street, which we hope to make very accessible, will make very accessible through land bridges. You think of the old Hilco site, which is called the Bellwether District. It just seems like things never could get in a position where it was a sweet spot to develop. And we think we're in that period right now.
Dan, wasn't there also, I'm trying to think of the exact timing, but my recollection is that there was a development plan made, but that was about the same time that the big recession hit in like latter part of 2008, 2009.
Yep.
And that kind of ground everything to a halt.
Yeah. And that's exactly right, John. But you think about what happened after that.
Right.
You know, eventually COVID, but the sale of the Sixers, Ed Snyder's health issues, and it really never got traction again.
Right.
But we did have with Cordish, we developed Xfinity Live, still is a great place. Xfinity Live, Cordish and us are going to invest in really bringing that up to date. And that will be one of the first things that will be noticeable about the development along Patterson Avenue.
John, you mentioned the timing, and that was something that Glenn and I wanted to get into, because let's be frank, the timing of this was rather interesting. Why shouldn't people interpret the nature of this partnership and the plans for development as an attempt to thwart the Sixers from building an arena at 10th and Market?
From my perspective, look, I said when I came in, there were the four priorities. They were moving along parallel tracks. Now, look, do we want to do everything we can to entice the Sixers into staying with us and in a 50-50 partnership, and we're leaving a space for a new arena at the right time? Absolutely. Like, but it was less about thwarting the Sixers. It was more about enticing them to stay with us.
Yeah. That's what I would say too. The verb you use, thwart, means to kind of actively oppose. Nobody's actively opposing the Sixers. They own their team. They get to make their own decisions. They're smart people. They're experienced people. They'll make what they think is the best decision for the Sixers. And all this does is try to show them that there's a path, if you stay in the sports complex, to get enormous economic.
Yeah. So we should not interpret this partnership then, John, as the Phillies taking a public position on the Sixers' plans for the downtown arena?
Absolutely not. And let me be very clear. If I thought this plan were contingent in any way on the Sixers staying as opposed to perhaps going, I wouldn't be involved. I'm not going to waste my time personally. I'm not going to waste my senior executive's time. I'm not going to waste the millions of dollars we're going to spend on this just to hope the Sixers say yes. I'm just not going to do it. That's a really foolish position for me to take. It's an irresponsible position, in my opinion, for my partners to take. So we're going forward regardless of what the Sixers do.
And John, as we've talked, that's how we feel about it, Mike. I have a great deal of respect for Josh Harris and David Blitzer and what they've built, their sports empire. I think that the key thing here is that we truly believe that the four teams in a sports district that is focused on from state, local government, that where people can come to one place to get their sports, professional sports entertainment, we think it's a no-brainer. But we have respect for them, and echoing what John said, completely believe that the Sixers have a right. This is a good thing for Philadelphia. There was a recent poll done by an Oxford-based think tank, that rate at the top 1,000 cities in the world. It was written up in the Inquirer. And the truth of the matter is Philadelphia came in 33rd. We're truly a world-class city, and we sometimes don't think of ourselves that way. So the fact that two professional franchises are thinking about staying in Philadelphia, investing in Philadelphia, and have slightly different visions, that's okay. This is a good debate. We would hope to entice them back, but I just want to echo what John said. We're in this development to stay, and we're really excited about creating a new, great neighborhood in Philadelphia.
I want to follow up on this with Dan, because Dan, we've talked about this before, and I appreciate John's position, which is John is not taking a position on the Sixers. I get that. But Dan, there is more incentive for you to worry about what the Sixers are going to do in the future. And given that the Flyers and the Phillies and the Eagles all control their own buildings, is there any reason the Sixers shouldn't want to do the same? Shouldn't they want to be able to control their own revenue stream, their own home arena environment? Shouldn't that be a priority for them?
So I would say this, Glenn. It gets back to my earlier point. Absolutely, they have the right to control their own destiny. What we're offering is together, not as owner-tenant of the facility, but as partners, full-fledged partners, control our mutual destiny. And instead of competing with each other, competition's good. Instead of competing with each other, we compete against the world to bring great acts to the Wells Fargo Center, which we've maximized the potential of, to make sure we support the Phillies and the Eagles in terms of bringing, other than their great professional teams, to the stadium and the arena, two stadiums, also bring acts there as well. So it's more about that, not trying to, as the word Mike used, thwart their ability to control their own destiny. Let's control our destiny together.
Yeah, and Glenn, I know you directed that to Dan, but let me just add to Dan. You know, the sports complex in Philadelphia is unique. It's the only place in the United States where four teams, you know, are together inside the city limits. And look, I think it's a really strong economic generator for Philadelphia. We bring collectively 7 million people a year down to the sports complex. And the idea behind the Comcast development is to take that environment and make it even more desirable, so people will be able to live there, will be office buildings to work there, there'll be lots, even more entertainment options for them down there. And that's only going to make that sports complex a bigger economic generator for the region. And simply, my personal belief is that four of us are better than three of us. And so it's their decision, obviously. But I hope the Sixers stay. I mean, it's partly an emotional decision for me. They've been there for decades. It's kind of, I wasn't a young child when they moved in there, but that's most of my life and all my adult life. They've been there, and I like them there. They've been great neighbors, and I really like, the people who are involved there, the Sixers. I mean, David's father sat behind me in the 2009 playoffs, and we were crouching together in the aisles when Jimmy Rollins hit that walk-off double and Chooch came rolling around third and scored. You know, they're great. And I know Dave through his father, and I respect Dave and I like Dave. I just, personally, I hope they stay, but it's their decision.
Yeah. I think the thing that's lost on this, it's a public policy decision, and we're going through the studies. Hopefully the studies will be released sometime soon. Our perspective, I was fortunate in my old career to serve as chairman of the Chamber of Commerce for 2 years. We have to do what's best for the city of Philadelphia. If it's determined by the mayor, Mayor Parker, who's off to a great start, and council, that that's the best way for the city to go, so be it. I think that we'll really have to concentrate on what are the roadblocks to making it successful. Last summer, I sat at my window looking as Drake, the performer, was coming. My kids tell me, extremely popular performer.
You're not a big fan, Dan?
I didn't say that.
Did you?
Yeah. So Drake was there. I looked out my window and you saw 49, I counted them, tractor trailers that were lined up, and there was a process of them going in, the loading dock, pulling out. And then there were an additional 20 to 22 high-end mobile homes for staff and band members and all that. And I just began thinking, like, can we do that on East Market? Well, the plan's going to tell us if we can do it. So I think that's just one indicator. Another is when you think of content and you think of how many acts can we actually get here? If you look at comparable cities, Boston, Houston, we're in the same level. We get 98% of the acts that are coming to Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo Center. If there were more acts out there, we'd be getting them. So that's why I'm so bullish on us staying together and maximizing the potential of one facility.
The reported price tag is $2.5 billion. How are you paying for this? Who's financing it?
Well, you know, it's that number did get out, and it is in the billions of dollars. So when you look at it, and John and I will team up on this, there's two components. The sports district, the grid around it, the traffic flow is from, I said 1971 when the Veterans Stadium opened, but it goes back to the 1800s. That's when the roads were first put in there. So first and foremost, we have to focus on working with PennDOT, working with SEPTA to improve access in and out of the facility, both on the highways 95 and 76, and make sure that we make it much easier for people to get in and out. That we're hoping there would be funding by state and city sources
and federal,
absolutely. But everything inside, from hotels to restaurants to, we're about to announce the construction of a 6,000 seat entertainment venue, that they will all be privately funded. Anything else we do on the site will be with partners, privately funded.
Yeah, and just picking up on that as a second, Mike. The transportation problems down there are legendary. They've been miserable. I would call them almost a disaster. And at times, if you have multiple events and they're not allowed to overlap, but sometimes when you have 75,000 right. people leaving an Eagles game and the Phillies are playing
in
three
the playoffs,
hours
yes,
late, yeah. later, you mean just you couldn't put
you,
enough time.
You park your car on 95 and hope for the best.
Correct. But it's even the access issues are even more than that. The port needs better access to 95. We need to have a connection. You know, that is to say, the sports complex needs to have a connection to the Navy Yard, to Hilco, to the park. I mean, you know, the FDR Park is getting $250 million invested in it. Well, we have to integrate all of those things together. And when I've talked to both the mayor and the governor, that's their vision too. Is that this is an opportunity for us to take a holistic look at that whole region, so to speak, within the Philadelphia market. And it's not just about the sports complex. It's about all these other ancillary places, knitting them together, having a cohesive vision going forward. And yeah, that's going to, yeah, just think about that as I talk about it. That's enormous infrastructure improvements. Yeah. And that is a federal government, local government, state government.
And John, it includes the existing neighborhoods too.
Absolutely.
We've been in dialogue with.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to the neighbors, they're beside themselves and they have a right to be. I mean, I looked out of my office building after every game in an hour, you know, it's 40 plus thousand people. It's an hour and a half in Patterson Avenue is a parking lot. I mean, a parking lot. I don't mean there's creeping. I mean, I can look at a car and 5-10 minutes later, I come back and I see the same car in basically the same place.
Before we hit a break, so you have spoken to the mayor, to Mayor Parker, and to Governor Shapiro about this. What has been their feedback on this idea?
Well, I think they're both really excited. They are both really excited. Look, the mayor has been down to Atlanta twice. We all went down. Comcast went down. The Phillies went down. The mayor brought some senior staff. She was so impressed that she called Terry McGuirk up from the Braves and said, sent him an email. Because Terry, he got it during the owners' meetings in New York. And he sent it to me. He said, I just wanted to see you see this. And she said, I'd like to come back down and bring more people. Okay. So she's been down twice. That should tell you everything you need to know about it. And the governor sees this as a significant, maybe even the most significant development opportunity in the state of Pennsylvania. Yeah. This is a major, major deal. I will tell you, I think if Mike, so we had a factory down at 3rd and Pine Street. We had it for a long, long time, decades and decades. In circa 1957, the Redevelopment Authority walked in and handed my grandfather a letter and said, you need to vacate. And my grandfather said, why? And he said, because we're going to redevelop this whole area. We're going to call it Society Hill. And you got 2 years to get out of here and degree, or else we're going to just condemn your building and we're going to force you out of here. And you can see, you know, 60 plus years later, the impact of the that redevelopment on Philadelphia. And it's huge. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of Philadelphia now. And I think this development, and particularly when you think about uniting it with the other adjacent developments, can have the same impact over 100 years for Philadelphia. This is not just a small isolated project. This is kind of a jump start for the whole, you know, area down there.
Yeah. And our reaction, just to add to John's point, our conversations with both the Governor Shapiro and Mayor Parker have been consistent with what John has heard. They're enthused about this type of development.
Yeah. In fact, we had an African-American chamber event at the stadium after the first Atlanta visit. And she spoke about how great the opportunity was.
So when we come back, we'll dive more into these issues related to the proposal in South Philadelphia. We'll ask Dan about the Flyers and their future. Again, we're on with Philly's principal owner, John Middleton, Comcast Spectacor.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Chairman Dan Hilferty, Glenn Macnow, and Mike Sielski on 94 WIP. 94 WIP, Glenn Macnow and Mike Sielski. Again, pleased to be joined by Philly's principal owner, John Middleton, and Comcast Spectacor CEO and Flyers governor, Dan Hilferty. Dan, let's touch on the Flyers at the moment. What have you learned, if anything, from about the right way to build a team from the success you've seen the Phillies have over the last few years?
Well, Mike, first and foremost, let me get to the last part of the question. Just having the opportunity to watch John and his amazing team as they, from a business side, support baseball operations, and that there's no wall between the sides of the organization. And that was something when I came over, one of the, if you can call it a hallmark, or just something about the organizations that I've had the good fortune to run. I always believed that leadership's a team sport, that there were certain skills that I had, certain strengths that I have, and others have strengths that I don't have. And so if you can put a complementary group of people together on a cause, you can do great things. So I came into this, I was very clear when I took this role that I'm a hockey fan. I am by no means a hockey expert. I will say this, over the course of the last year, spending a lot of time with Keith Jones, Danny Briere, and John Tortorella, I've learned a lot of hockey and I've had fun doing that. But here's what I've seen. Taking that whole philosophy, we on the business side have tried to build bridges, and I call it a toll-free bridge between the business side and the hockey side. And that was number one, bringing in leadership that I felt folks that had their ego in check. We all have big egos at a certain level. Those two guys, Keith Jones, Danny Briere, played NHL hockey at a very high level. So bringing them in and really having them buy into this team approach where they're very comfortable on the business side, the business folks are comfortable on that side. So that was number one, create an environment, a culture. The second thing we wanted to do was accept nothing but excellence. You walk through Citizens Bank Park facility, you walk through the Eagles facilities, you feel excellence. You feel it in every way, the way the offices are structured, the way people interact. We want that same culture. And I'm seeing that being built where we're accepting nothing but the best. And that goes to the transformation of the Wells Fargo Center. We're in the midst of a transformation over at Voorhees that we want, when we get to a point where we can go after free agents, we want them to feel Philly's the place we want to be. So it's that environment. And then really accepting as a group and communicating as a group that, look, we're going to try to win every night, but this is going to be a process and we're going to take time.
You're using a dirty word here.
But no, it is a process. And what we say is we're going to do it the right way, and it's going to take time. And so it's about drafting the right players. You know, you hear the chatter about Mishkov, the potential Mishkov coming. When we drafted him as an 18-year-old, we knew this could take 3 years. It still might take 3 years for him to come, but we're making the right decision so that it's not a one-year fix. It's not a two-year fix. It's creating a perennial contender. And so I feel really good that through the Hockey Guys leadership, the support of the business side, kind of our new approach to engaging fans, new old approach to engaging fans, that we're making significant progress.
I'm hearing a bit of pumping the brakes on expectations for the next year.
Well, I think, Glenn, if you listen to us, what we call the first year of the new era of Orange, this is the second year of the new era of Orange. And I will tell you, if we were sitting here this time last year, and obviously I was just getting my feet wet, but if we were sitting here and one of you said to me, hey, on the last game of the regular season, you're going to have a chance to make the playoffs. And it's going to, you've got to beat one team and you have to rely on another team. We would have been ecstatic. And so I would say we overperformed last year. Now, the hope is, as a fan, that level of overperformance or becomes real performance as guys mature and continue to get comfortable with each other, we hope to make the playoffs. I can't say it any other way, but the truth of the matter is that's not the measure of success. The measure of success is continuing within the cap structure to build a strong future while trying to win every single game we play. And so my expectation isn't about the playoffs per se. My expectation is that the professional leadership, the hockey leadership, feels that the players that are going to be part of our future continue to develop. A Tyson Forrester, a Jamie Drysdale, you could go on Cam York, just to name a few, that they continue to grow and develop. And we see, as I said, a perennial contender, much like John and the Phillies have done.
Let's shift back to the South Philly project and the arena question for a second. One name that's been conspicuously absent from the public discussion about the Spectacore Sixers conflict issue, tete-a-tete, whatever word you want to use, is Jeffrey Lurie. Do either of you have any sense of where the Eagles stand on this?
Well, I'll just give a quick answer. In terms of the arena issue, I don't have a sense of that. I don't. But what I do know is that whether a conversation, and John's had more conversations with Jeffrey than I have, but with Don Smolenski and the team, they are an amazing, amazing neighbor. When you think of the World Cup, the bid that we were able to win, we wouldn't have done it without the Eagles. Opening up the stadium, explaining to FIFA how we can turn it into a pitch and a fan experience, it will be amazing. So I just, from my perspective, and I think John shares it, that the Eagles are a great neighbor. So our conversation is more focused on our vision and hopefully bringing them on board for the development of the sports district.
Yeah, I just would maybe expand on that slightly to say more directly in answer to your question. We've been in communication with them from the beginning. We met with them before any pencils were put down on paper, any drawings were made, any plans, thought through. We then went back, did they're calling the vision plan now, what I might call a conceptual plan. It was kind of the one that was released publicly. We sat down with the Eagles and talked about that at length, got their feedback, got a clear understanding of their needs. And we've gone back and we've incorporated not just the Eagles' needs, but other stakeholders, the neighborhood, the neighbors and other people, some of the political people's views on what we need to do. And we have a revised plan that we'll sit down and talk to the Eagles. We're trying to set that up now. Expect to do it in the not too distant future.
And you think about one of the big needs of the Eagles, John, is tailgating, the tradition of tailgating. Although one thing I've learned is there's quite a tailgating atmosphere around Phillies games And so our revised plan really addresses their concerns about tailgating, which is such a great tradition of Philadelphia sports.
Yeah, you're going to, I guess there's been mention of parking garages down there. Yeah. Will there be enough space to accommodate that tradition that you're talking about.
Yeah. So, I think the short answer is yes. I think going back to some of our conversation earlier and the traffic congestion, in a critical step that the neighbors want, that, you know, all of the sports teams want, that the politicians want, is we need to hire a traffic consultant. Traffic consultant needs to come in and look at this whole area and try to build some of those bridges for, you know, between the sports complex, the Navy Yard, between the port, the 995, between us and Hilco and the highways. That's the traffic expert's job. And one of his, you know, criteria is going to be, you need to provide proper tailgating space. And we actually think, you know, Mike, we can, you know, and I should say we, because I'm not doing the planning and the drawing, but, you know, the planners think they can improve on the tailgating experience by having kind of the old traditional tailgating, but also providing spaces where people want to do maybe not eat outside the back of the car. They can kind of, maybe, I don't know whether it's a picnic area, how it evolves, but there's, you know, the idea is to provide what people have been doing for decades. I used to do it in 1961 with my parents, but then upgrade it too, so that other people, you know, now that we're older, I probably, if I were tailgating, I'd probably want to do it a little differently than I did in 1961. Probably have a little different food than I had back then too.
But Mike, you mentioned the garages. I mean, when you think about easy in and out, a garage is not the best way to come in and out of a sports district. So as part of the traffic study, a part of the work is, and like John, I'm not in the room doing this planning, is to look at how we can save traditional tailgating in the acreage that we have and do it in a way that contributes to easy in and out.
Yeah. I want to get back for a moment to what the Sixers hope to do and ask Dan a couple of questions here. The first being, they argue that Philadelphia can easily support two 20,000 seat arenas, that there's enough events, there's going to be enough, that the study is going to show that there will be enough nights in use. You disagree with that. I know you do. Why do you disagree with that?
So Glenn, a couple of points. Let's first of all, when you think about it, I started to talk about my role at the chamber and thinking about the great avenues in Philadelphia. We need to have a master plan, yes, that focuses on Market East, but focuses on North Broad, 52nd Street, 60th Street, the great avenues in South Philadelphia, up in Northeast, Cottman Avenue and others. So a master plan is needed. And so that's one thing we keep pushing for. And there should be focus on making sure that Market East is, heck, we've got the historical district, is the gateway to our great city. So that's first and foremost. But let's talk about your question. So if you look at, I mentioned Houston, Boston, ourselves, you know, they're in the 50 to 60 event range. We get 98% of the events we want, as I said earlier. So we're just not sure. We've done a study ourselves, and that study shows that 12 to 15 additional shows are possible. Hey, we'll give it that. But let's say for a second, the Sixers take every one of our shows. And let's just use a rough number of 50. Take every one of our shows. So you've got a Sixers team that we hope plays many more home games than 41. So let's give it 50. Mm-hmm. They play 50 a year. And let's say they determine they'd like to get a WNBA team. Bring WNBA team with playoffs. That's 30 plus games maybe. So what are we at, 80? And then you throw in 50 more shows. That means that on those nights, those afternoons, there'll be a lot of traffic associated with the arena, but over 200 days a year, that arena will be dark. And when you contrast that, there are nights where we're dark. We are well over 200 in nights that it's active, but it's usually a night where the Phillies have a game. It's usually a day where the Eagles are playing or another activity down in the arena district. And that's why we just think combining everything instead of fighting each other is so key. But that is a key point. We do not believe there's enough content. Houston, which is the only facility there, their population's about to take over Chicago. They got, I think, 60 events last year. Well, 60 events, don't you think if there were more events out there, they're the single a single building in a third largest market in the country, that they would bring them in. We just don't think they're there.
Given the labor support, HBSC's collective wealth, support of Mayor Parker, what reason is there to think that the Sixers aren't going to get this done?
Well, I guess let's start with organized labor. We have an extremely strong relationship with organized labor, as you're right, HBSC does. Well, isn't it the job of organized labor to focus on construction jobs for their members? So, yeah, it's there. They're supportive of both projects, in a sense, I'd like to say. The mayor has not come out and said firmly that she's for either the project. She's spoken favorably to us. We don't know where the mayor is going to end up on this issue. We are hoping that the two PIDC studies come out, and that one study is focused on the content issue that we talked about, the economic impact. The second part is on neighborhood impact, traffic, and other things. So we're hoping that when the studies come out, we all have a very educated discussion about what's best for the future of Philadelphia. And then between the mayor and city council, a decision will be made. I'll tell you, we have a terrific relationship with Ryan Boyer and the building trades, and continue to dialogue with them on a regular basis. When you're talking about our site, we'll create 11,000 jobs over the course of the decade, roughly decade. And there'll be 9,750 temporary jobs in construction. And then when you talk about down the road, full-time 1,200 jobs that will stay right in South, will grow the South Philly marketplace in terms of employment. So either way, it's good for the construction trades. Either way, it's good for their members. But again, we're going to have a discussion about this where we focus on what's truly best for the future of Philadelphia.
So Citizens Bank Park is one of the great ballparks in America. It's beautiful. It's a phenomenal place to watch a game. I think it opened in 2004.
Correct.
20 years you have put in a ton of money into Wells Fargo to keep it up to date, modern, ahead of the game. What is the lifespan? And I guess this question, because it used to be that you would build a stadium and, you know, Fenway Park would be open forever. That doesn't happen anymore. What is the lifespan of those buildings per your expectations, and how that fits into this project?
Dan, you start.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, so I think, Glenn, baseball stadiums are somewhat unique, not totally unique, maybe because they're Soldiers Field, obviously, in Chicago. But baseball stadiums tend to be like a really nice wine that ages really well. Hmm. And you have, you know, Fenway and you have Wrigley. As long as you put the money into the stadium over time, and the Phillies have been very good about doing that, you know, and there's infrastructure issues, HVAC units and electrical systems and all that. There's upgrades. I mean, the electronics that you now have in stadiums are much more than they were 20 years ago, so you need more power. But as long as you put your money into that on a regular basis, and then the other thing that you have to be prepared to spend money on is over time, fans, customers' preferences change. And the way people would watch a game and the way they would consume concessions 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago is different than it is today. And if you go around to the newer stadiums that have been built since we've opened, I mean, we learned, you know, Dave Montgomery did a spectacular job of surveying not just baseball stadiums, but football stadiums, college stadiums, you know, hockey and basketball arenas all over the country, and taking their best ideas and then added some new ones, frankly, into Citizens Bank Park. And you just have to kind of, when I walk around a stadium and, I'm looking at things that they do that are kind of new and different, and you pick up ideas, and some of those you can kind of paste on into Citizens Bank Park with some money, obviously. Some of those are going to be much more expensive, and you have to kind of consider that. But we're committed to up maintaining Citizens Bank Park as a first rate park, and it takes money, yeah. But you can do it. And if you do it, there's no reason why this park can't last 100 years or more, just like Fenway, just like Wrigley. And part of, you know, I think part of going back to this project, when Dan proposes to me, I mean, look, we have our leases coming up in a while. It's not like, you know, in the next 3 or 4 years, but it's coming up. But to me, the decision to participate in this project and be part of this project, we need to make, you know, we're making a commitment to the city of Philadelphia to be where, and our fans to be where we are, and to make this our home long after I'm dead and gone. And so we need to, that's the way we're thinking about this. And we're prepared. I mean, one of the things, you know, if we're going to have lease extension negotiations, you know, we have to prepare for what do we need from the city, the state, the federal government to help us get there. And the transportation is the number one thing on my hit list. Hmm. But, and there's some other things that are more stadium specific to the Phillies, but we're prepared to make that commitment, and we're excited about it because we think this will be a really great, you can take a good great fan experience and make it that much better over the next 50 years.
Dan, so how about you with the Senate?
Yeah, great. Thank you. So you think about what we did, our $400 million transformation, and the whole idea was to really focus on what the fans, the way they spectate, the way they want to be entertained around games has changed over the years. We wanted to make sure the Wells Fargo Center was keeping up with the trends that the fans, how they like to watch a game. But if you look at places like Madison Square Garden, where they went through a significant transportation, Boston Garden, which is about the same vintage as ours, made changes that extended the life of the arena. I think the difference is that at some point, we will need to build a new Wells Fargo Center, a new arena, and that's still several years out, many years out. But the truth of the matter is the focus has been on fan experience, and we feel that we've extended the life of the Wells Fargo Center significantly by the things we've done, and then with this development plan, it will extend it even further.
One of the points I've made in writing for the Inquirer about this issue is that you don't know what you don't know, right? The Sixers proposed their plan in 2022, knowing that their lease with the Wells Fargo Center was going to expire in 2031. Mm-hmm. Go back 9 years from 2022, that's 2013. There's a lot that happened between 2013 and 2022 that no one could have predicted around America, around this region. How do you two guys take what you don't know into consideration? What is Philadelphia going to look like? What's its population going to be? Where is that population clustered? How do you plan for the things you don't know?
Well, that's a really good question. And from my point of view, John, I think it's this, that there's been one constant as it relates to the industry that we're in, and that is that fans are going to come out to watch the teams they love. And what we're seeing, the trends in Philadelphia, there's construction of apartments and different types of developments throughout the city. Young people post-pandemic are flocking back to Philadelphia. And so I believe in our city. And I believe as Mayor Parker works on everything from greening the city to cleaning the city, investing in projects like ours, that it'll attract more people back to Philadelphia. You can't predict for sure. Who knows what's next? But the truth of the matter is, a constant has been our fans enjoy sports. Our fans will come out, assuming we continue to have honest dialogues with them, provide a product that's exciting. And that's where our focus is. We're just trying to create an environment that is more than just sports and entertainment. It is a true part of the great South Philadelphia neighborhood.
I know we have just a couple of minutes left, and I want to kind of get back to your goals and plans and what this project could be. So I guess I'll ask each of you, Dave, what excites you, or Dave, John, what excites you most about it from your end? What's the facility, the building, the attraction? And Dan, what is yours, and do I get to see all of my aging rock acts in that 6,000-seat auditorium? Because I got to tell you,
yes,
that's pretty much the groups that I will be going for, the over the hill ones that'll attract 5,000 people.
So why don't I quickly just say, yes, you will. Because
good.
What I've learned is, and we're set up so well for this, the acts coming up will fit nicely in a 6,000 seat arena.
Yeah, that's not mine.
Yeah, no, no, I'm with you. But then they'll move into a site like the Wells Fargo where you can get 20,000 folks. But then as they get mega acts, they're going to come to John and they're going to come to the Eagles and for the stadiums. We see it every summer, every year. So on the way down, the James, I shouldn't say this, but James Taylors of the world.
Hello. Been there.
Sorry, James.
If it's any consolation, I'm going to see Jeff Lynn at the Wells Fargo Center in September. So he's not exactly a spring chicken either.
No, it's true. But to answer quick question, I interrupted John here, but yes, we will take care of you on that in that regard, Glenn.
John, what excites you the most?
I think what I said earlier, Glenn, that this to me isn't just a development project. This is really a reorientation and for the future of Philadelphia. I think this is going to transform this part of Philadelphia because we are going to work very hard and we're going to be successful in connecting to the port, connecting with Navy Yard, connecting with Hilco, connecting with FDR Park. And I think that's going to radically change just the way Society Hill did, 60 years ago, radically change the future of Philadelphia for the better. And I'm really excited by that. I just hope I frankly live long enough to see it because that's going to be a long project.
John Middleton, Dan Hilferty, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your insight. We appreciate it. And we'd love to do this again down the road.
All right.
Mike, Glenn, thank you. We've enjoyed it.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.